A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been on a Victorian accessory tier lately, and after monocles and pocket watches, he's arrived at the final boss, the top hat. His question is practical, in its own unhinged way. Who actually wears these things? How do you pull it off without looking like you're about to challenge Alexander Hamilton to a duel? And what's the minimum you can spend to get something that won't disintegrate by the second dinner party?
The top hat is the ultimate commitment to the bit, a monocle you can pop in and out. A pocket watch stays in your pocket. But a top hat sits on your head, a foot above your eyeline, announcing your choices to every person in a 3-block radius. You can't hide it. You can't downplay it. You have chosen to look like a Dickensian chimney sweep who came into money.
And yet people do. Not ironically. Not for costume parties. There are thousands of them, and they have forums.
Oh, the forums. I went deep into this. The Fedora Lounge, the Hat Shapers Guild. These aren't people messing around. They discuss crown height in millimeters and silt nap direction with the intensity of sommeliers arguing about terroir. And they're genuinely warm and welcoming, but if you post a photo of a $20 Amazon costume hat and ask for feedback, you'll receive a very gentle, very firm education.
Before we get into the buying guide, let's understand what we're actually dealing with here, because the top hat has an origin story that sets the tone for everything else. In 797, a man named John Hetherington walked out onto the streets of London wearing the first modern top hat. He was reportedly fined £500 for causing a public disturbance. Women fainted, children screamed, dogs barked. The hat was considered dangerously ostentatious. It was a public menace.
£500 in 1797 was a staggering sum. That's tens of thousands in today's money. And the charge was essentially breach of the peace, because his hat was so shocking it caused a riot. That's where we're starting from. The top hat was born as an act of aesthetic aggression.
Which is perfect, honestly. If you're going to wear one today, you should know that the very first person to do it was fined for disturbing the peace. You're continuing a proud tradition of making people uncomfortable on the sidewalk.
And then it became the symbol of high society for a century. Lincoln wore one, Churchill wore one, Fred Astaire made it look effortless. It went from public menace to the absolute peak of respectability, and then it died. By the 1960s, it was basically gone from daily life. Now it survives in two places, formal morning dress at royal weddings, and the deeply obsessive subculture Daniel stumbled into.
That subculture is what interests me. Who looks at a top hat in the year 2026 and thinks, yes, this is a reasonable thing to purchase and wear?
It's a few overlapping groups. You've got the historical reenactors, who are probably the most rigorous about authenticity. You've got the steampunk crowd, who are more about fantasy and modification. You've got the formal wear traditionalists, the people who still attend events where morning dress is expected. And then you've got the wild cards, the people who just decided this is their look and wear a top hat with jeans and a t-shirt to the grocery store. Those are my favorite.
The wild cards are the ones Daniel's really asking about, I think. He wants to know how to be one without looking like he lost a bet.
Right. But before we get to the social mechanics, we need to talk about what a real top hat actually is, because the market is a minefield. It splits into two extremes with almost nothing in the middle. On one end, you've got the $20 costume hat. It's made of shiny synthetic felt, usually polyester, glued onto a cardboard frame. The brim is floppy, the crown is the wrong shape, and if it gets humid, it starts to wilt like a dying flower. You wear it to a Halloween party, it looks passable in dim lighting, and by the next morning, the lining is peeling off.
And on the other end?
On the other end, you've got hats that cost $400 to $1,200 and are made using techniques that haven't changed substantially in 200 years. We're talking about over 20 separate manufacturing steps. Blocking the felt on a wooden mold, stiffening it with shellac. A process called pouncing, which is sanding the surface with progressively finer abrasives until it's perfectly smooth. Then applying the silk plush or fur nap. Hand sewing the brim binding. The sweatband alone is hand-stitched leather. A single hat can take a skilled artisan weeks to complete.
So there's no middle ground. You're either buying a hat-shaped object or an heirloom.
That's the core tension. And it's because the manufacturing process doesn't scale down gracefully. You can't make a top hat that's 60% as good for 40% of the price. The steps that make it good are all or nothing. Either you block it properly or the shape is wrong. Either you pounce it or the surface looks rough. Either you use real shellac stiffener or it collapses in humidity. There's no shortcut that produces an acceptable result.
Which is why the enthusiasts are so intense about this. You can't halfway care about top hats.
And the material question is where it gets really interesting. The traditional material is silk plush, which is silk pile woven onto a felt base. It has this incredible sheen, almost liquid. Under certain lights, it looks like polished obsidian. But silk plush is essentially extinct as a commercial product. There are maybe a handful of artisans in the UK who still have stocks of it, and when it's gone, it's gone. Nobody is manufacturing new silk plush at scale anymore.
Why not?
The looms that made it don't exist anymore. The knowledge of how to weave it has almost disappeared, and the market is tiny. You can't justify rebuilding an entire industrial process for a few hundred hats a year. So vintage silk plush top hats from makers like Christie's London or Lock & Company command serious money at auction. I saw a 1920s Christie's silk plush hat sold for £850 last year, and that was considered a good deal.
So if you want the real traditional material, you're hunting antiques.
Or commissioning from one of the last artisans who still has vintage silk plush stock. Graham Thompson in the UK is one of the names that comes up. His hats start around $1,000 and go up from there. But here's the thing about silk plush. It's incredibly fragile. Water ruins it. If you get caught in the rain, the silk nap can be permanently damaged. The hat essentially becomes a fair-weather accessory. You're buying a museum piece that you can occasionally wear.
Which sounds impractical for someone who wants to integrate this into daily life.
Right, which is why the modern alternative is beaver fur felt. Beaver fur has these microscopic barbs on each hair that interlock when felted, creating a material that's dense, water-resistant, and incredibly durable. A well-made beaver felt top hat can handle rain, can be re-blocked if it loses its shape, and with proper care will last decades. It doesn't have the liquid sheen of silk plush, it's more of a matte finish, but it's a working hat. It's the practical choice for someone who actually intends to wear the thing.
And the price difference?
A good beaver felt top hat from a U.S. artisan like Mike at Northwest Hats, or a similar maker, runs about $400 to $600. A beaver blend, which is beaver mixed with rabbit or hare fur, can be $250 to $350. That's probably the sweet spot for a first serious hat. Pure beaver is more durable and holds its shape better, but a blend gets you most of the way there for less money.
So we're talking about a minimum of $250 to get into something that won't embarrass you.
Actually, the enthusiast forum consensus pushes the floor a bit lower. You can find entry-level wool felt top hats from reputable retailers like Village Hat Shop or Bates Hats in the UK for around $150 to $200. They're not going to last a lifetime. The wool felt is less dense than fur felt, it won't hold a crisp shape as well, and the finishing isn't as refined. But they're real hats made with proper blocking and stiffening, not glued cardboard. For someone who wants to wear a top hat to a few dinner parties a year, that's probably the minimum viable purchase.
Below that, you're in costume territory.
Firmly. And the costume hats have tells that enthusiasts spot immediately. The shiny synthetic felt is the biggest giveaway. A real top hat has a subtle luster, not a plastic sheen. The brim on a costume hat is usually too floppy or too stiff in the wrong way. The crown is often too short or too tapered. The sweatband is synthetic and uncomfortable, and the lining is usually cheap satin that pills and tears. Wear one of those to a hat meet and people will be polite, but you'll know.
So, who are these people who care this much? You mentioned the forums. What's the actual community like?
It's fascinating. The Fedora Lounge has thousands of active members, and top hats are just one subsection of what they discuss. You've got people who collect hats from specific eras, people who restore vintage finds, people who commission custom work and document the process in obsessive detail. There are threads that go on for dozens of pages debating the correct brim curl for an 1860s versus an 1890s top hat. They use terms like the swoop and the rake to describe how a hat sits on the head.
The swoop and the rake. These are technical terms.
They are. The swoop is the curve of the brim as it transitions from the sides to the front and back. The rake is the angle at which the hat sits, slightly tilted forward or back. Get either one wrong and the whole silhouette changes. It's like typography for your head.
And there are hierarchies?
Unspoken, but real. The new person who shows up with a costume hat gets gently redirected toward educational resources. The intermediate collector who owns a few decent wool felts gets respect for doing their homework. And then there are the elders, the people who own 30-plus hats, who can identify a maker and approximate decade from a single photograph, who have strong opinions about whether modern Chinese-made beaver felt is acceptable, or if only vintage English silk plush counts as real. That debate gets heated.
I love that there's a geopolitical dimension to hat enthusiasm.
It's contentious. Some purists argue that the craft tradition is inseparable from the specific English and European workshops that developed it, and that anything made elsewhere is a reproduction, not a continuation. Others point out that some Chinese felt manufacturers are producing excellent material, and that gatekeeping based on geography is going to kill the craft faster than anything else. The same debate happens in every traditional craft community, but with hats, it's particularly intense because the number of remaining artisans is so small.
And then there's the steampunk crossover.
Which is a whole other layer of drama. Steampunk conventions created a secondary market for top hats, which is great for visibility and demand. But purists look down on the practice of gluing gears, goggles, and clock hands onto a hat. The tension is between authentic Victorian reproduction and fantasy accessory. There are flame wars about this. People have been banned from forums.
Over gluing gears to hats.
Over the principle of the thing. The purest argument is that a top hat is a specific historical object with a specific cultural meaning, and reducing it to a costume prop disrespects the craft. The steampunk argument is that all fashion is creative expression, and historical accuracy is just one flavor of it. Both sides have a point, and neither side will ever convince the other.
I have to say, I respect the intensity. These are people who found their thing and went all in. That's rare.
And there's something moving about it. A lot of these collectors are preserving knowledge that would otherwise disappear. They know how to restore a hat that's 100 years old. They know how to identify the maker of an unmarked hat from the shape of the sweatband stitching. They're not just consumers, they're custodians of a craft.
All right, so we know what a real top hat is and who's obsessed with them. Now, the practical question Daniel actually asked. If you want to wear one without looking like you raided a community theater costume closet, what do you actually buy, and how do you pull it off?
Let's start with the buying decision, then we'll get to the social mechanics. At the $150 to $200 level, you're looking at wool felt from a reputable retailer, Village Hat Shop in the US, Bates Hats in the UK. These hats are properly blocked and stiffened. The brim has a real curl. The sweatband is leather. They won't last decades, but they'll survive a season of dinner parties, and they'll look right in photos. That's your entry point.
And if you want to step up?
The $250 to $350 range gets you into beaver blend felt. This is where you start getting real durability. The hat will hold its shape through humidity, it can handle light rain, and the finish is noticeably better. Etsy has several reputable artisans in this range, though you need to do your research. Read reviews, look at customer photos, ask on the forums before you buy. The community is happy to help newcomers avoid mistakes.
And the top tier?
$400 to $600 for a custom beaver felt from a known maker like Northwest Hats or Falcon Park Hattery. At this level, the hat is made to your head measurements. You choose the crown height, brim width, curl style, ribbon width, everything. It's a collaborative process. The hat will outlive you with proper care. And then above that, you're in the silk plush stratosphere, $1,000 and up from the handful of artisans who still work with it. That's not a first hat. That's a grail piece for after you've been in the community for years.
So Daniel's minimum viable spend is somewhere around $150 to $200 for something he can wear to dinner parties without shame.
That's the floor. Below that, you're buying a costume piece, and the difference is visible to anyone who's ever seen a real top hat. It's like the difference between a suit from a department store and a costume pirate outfit. They're both fabric that goes on your body, but the intent and execution are worlds apart.
Now the harder question, How do you actually wear this thing in public?
The social mechanics are the real challenge. A bowler hat might get a second glance. A top hat gets a double take, often a photo, and frequently a direct question. You can't be shy about this. The key, according to every enthusiast who's written about this, is owning it completely. Confidence isn't optional. If you're awkward about the hat, people will be awkward back. If you're comfortable, they'll admire the commitment.
So you need a one-liner.
You need several, and you need to deliver them like you've never heard them before, even though you'll say them 100 times. The classics, I'm late for a duel. The 19th century called, they want their hat back. I told them, I'm keeping it. It's my emotional support Victorian accessory. The point isn't to be original. The point is to signal that you're in on the joke, that you know this is an unusual choice, and you made it deliberately.
The worst thing you can do is get defensive.
If someone says nice hat with a smirk and you launch into a defensive lecture about the history of hat making and the quality of beaver felt, you've lost. You look like you're compensating. The correct response is to tip the hat, say thank you, and keep walking. Let the hat speak for itself.
The other thing the enthusiasts emphasize is pairing it with otherwise modern clothing. You don't want to look like you're in costume.
Right. The top hat with a modern suit, or even with jeans and a well-fitted jacket, reads as a deliberate style choice. The top hat with a frock coat, cravat, and spats reads as cosplay. Unless you're actually at a historical reenactment event, you want the hat to be the only anachronistic element. It creates a tension that's interesting rather than costumey.
It's the difference between that person has a look, and that person thinks it's 1885.
And there's a practical element, too. If you're wearing a full Victorian outfit, you're making yourself unapproachable. People will stare, but they won't engage. If you're wearing a top hat with a modern blazer, you're inviting conversation. You're saying, I know this is unusual, let's talk about it.
What about the practicalities of actually wearing one? You mentioned rain is a problem.
Rain is the enemy. If you have a silk plush hat, rain will ruin it, period. You need to carry an umbrella at all times, or have a plan for ducking into doorways. Fur felt hats are more resilient, but they're not waterproof. They can handle a light drizzle, but a downpour will still cause problems. You need to let a wet hat dry naturally, away from direct heat, on a hat stand. Never put a wet hat near a radiator. It'll shrink and warp.
And storage?
This is the mistake every beginner makes. You can't store a top hat sitting on its brim. The brim will flatten and lose its curl. You store it upside down, resting on the crown or on a proper hat stand. The crown is reinforced and designed to bear weight. The brim is not. Get a hat brush too, a soft bristle brush for removing dust. And if the hat loses its shape over time, you take it to a hatter for reblocking. It's like getting a suit tailored. Regular maintenance keeps it looking right.
So this isn't a grab-and-go accessory?
Not at all. It's a relationship. You're committing to a level of care that most modern accessories don't require. But the enthusiast will tell you that's part of the appeal. The ritual of brushing the hat, storing it properly, checking the weather before you wear it out, it's mindful. It's the opposite of disposable fashion.
There's a funny parallel here to something I said once about monocles being a gateway drug to full Victorian cosplay. The top hat is where that path ends. You start with a pocket watch, then a monocle, then you're standing in the rain with a silk plush hat wondering where it all went wrong.
And yet, the people who make it to the end of that path seem happy. I read a post from a forum member who wore a top hat to work every day for a year. He worked in an office, normal job, normal clothes, except for the hat. He said the most common reaction was curiosity, not mockery. People wanted to know where he got it, how much it cost, whether it was comfortable. Kids loved it. Tourists took photos. He said the only question he got tired of was, are you a magician?
Which is fair, honestly. If you wear a top hat, people are going to ask if you're a magician. That's just the social contract.
He said he developed a standard response, only on Tuesdays. And then he'd keep walking. The point is, he integrated it into his life and the world adjusted. Most people aren't hostile to eccentricity. They're curious about it. The hostility mostly comes from people who are uncomfortable with anything outside the norm, and those people were going to find something to be uncomfortable about regardless.
So, let's boil this down into something Daniel can actually use. 3 takeaways for the aspiring top hat wearer.
First, on the purchase. If you want to try this without breaking the bank, start with a $150 to $200 wool felt hat from a reputable retailer, not a costume shop. Except that it won't last forever, but it'll survive a season of dinner parties and give you a real sense of whether you actually enjoy wearing it. If you're serious, save for a $400-plus beaver felt hat from a known maker. Join a forum before you buy. The community will steer you right.
Second, on the social mechanics, confidence is 90% of pulling it off. Have a one-liner ready, pair the hat with modern clothing, and never get defensive. The hat is a conversation starter, not a shield. If you can't laugh at yourself, don't buy one.
And third, on maintenance. Store it upside down on the crown or on a hat stand. Brush it regularly. Keep it away from rain if it's silk plush, and away from radiators regardless. This isn't a low-maintenance accessory. Treat it like you'd treat a good leather jacket or a fine watch. The care is part of the experience.
Which brings us to the bigger question. Is the top hat due for a genuine revival, or is it always going to be a niche curiosity?
The enthusiast community is growing, but it's still tiny. I could see a celebrity or influencer triggering a trend. Stranger things have happened. Look at what Peaky Blinders did for flat caps and newsboy hats. One well-placed top hat in the right movie or music video, and suddenly every stylist wants one. But the barrier to entry is high. The cost, the maintenance, the social commitment. This isn't like trying a new sneaker brand. It's a whole lifestyle pivot.
The other thing that worries me is the craft itself. You said silk plush is essentially extinct. The last artisans who know how to make these hats are retiring. What happens when they're gone?
That's the existential question for the community. There are younger hatters learning the trade, but they're working with modern materials, mostly fur felt. The silk plush tradition may die out. Some people are experimenting with modern alternatives, synthetic materials that mimic the sheen of silk plush without the fragility. Could 3D printed or laser cut top hats become a thing? But it won't be the same object with the same cultural weight. It'll be a new thing inspired by an old thing.
Which is how craft evolution always works, I suppose. The thing you're preserving is always already a snapshot of a moment that passed.
And yet the hats themselves survive. There are top hats from the 1860s that still look magnificent. That's what gets people into this. You hold something that's 160 years old, and it's still beautiful, still functional, still carrying the marks of the hands that made it. That's not just fashion. That's material history you can wear.
And if you wear it to the grocery store, you'll also get asked if you're a magician. Two things can be true.
Only on Tuesdays.
We should thank our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for making this possible, and Daniel for sending us down yet another rabbit hole filled with passionate people who care deeply about something most of us never think about.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you have a weird prompt, something you've always wondered about but never had the guts to ask, send it to us at myweirdprompts.com. We'll go down the rabbit hole so you don't have to.
Or, in this case, down the hat hole. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from law. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.